Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape, well, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. This episode, we're going to be talking all about the first season of Marvel's She-Hulk Attorney at Law that just wrapped up late last week on Disney Plus. A lot of controversy about this one, maybe not from the Geekscapists, who I think generally enjoyed the season. But we're going to have to talk about the ins and outs, the comedy of it, the rage-inducing of it, I think the social commentary of it. I think I loved She-Hulk. I thought it was awesome. I thought I got better every week. But I know opinions vary, and there's somebody on the show today to talk about the varied opinions, our very own Ian Kerner. Yeah, I just saw Ian on Friday because he was at my wedding. Look at this. Look at this. I just got a brand new piece of look at that. That's a new piece of jewelry right there. My wedding band. but that didn't stop me from giving you two Geekscapes last week during my wedding. Go back and listen to those. Those are a whole lot of fun. And also, it's not stopping me from giving you a brand new Geekscape tomorrow. But welcome to the She-Hulk special. We're not going to be talking too much about the wedding on this one. We will be talking about the She-Hulk. I just got a comment that says She-Hulk is still on my watch list, just haven't had the time. Congrats on the wedding. I don't understand it. If I had time to watch She-Hulk the week of my wedding and be right here to give you two Geekscapes, like I don't get why you can't just watch the She-Hulk. And no, I'm just kidding. I'm very much kidding. All right, let's get to it. Let's start talking some She-Hulk. This is Geekscape. And right about now, you can maybe hit that share button and be like, hey, Jonathan and Ian are going to be talking ins and outs of She-Hulk. You might want to come over here. So take that little share button on whatever app or YouTube or wherever you're watching this and share it with your friends. And let's get a party started. All right, let's go. All right, Geekscapers, let's get down to the She-Hulk. But real quick, we just got some rankings in for the Geekscape podcast. Let me just read them to you because I was checking them during the theme song. You are currently listening to, let's see where we ranked. There it is, right there. The 51st most popular film interview podcast in Poland. That's right. And the 55th most popular film interview podcast in the Philippines. So give yourselves a round of applause for getting us up the charts there. The Finn Jones episode specifically, you know, Finn Jones, he played Danny Rand Iron Fist in the Netflix series, and hopefully he'll do it again in the MCU. We're going to be talking about his good friend Charlie Cox here in a little bit. His episode was, this is crazy, that episode was the number 21st most downloaded film interview podcast in the Ukraine. Like, there's a war going on in the Ukraine, and they're like, hey, let me just pause the war a little bit so I can listen to some Finn Jones and whether or not he's going to come back as Iron Fist in the MCU. So we appreciate that. If you're listening from Ukraine, I hope you're safe. Hope you're good. And I hope this brings you a little bit of, I don't know, respite from what you're going through there in your country. To our friends around the world, thank you for listening to Geekscape, and share us with your friends. Who knows what they're going through, and maybe they could use a little bit of nerd talk in their lives. Okay, that's enough of that. We love you very much. And with love in the air, let's throw it to my good friend Ian Kerner, who I saw at my wedding, and I loved seeing him. He was at the nerdiest table. No, the nerdiest table is probably full of Geekscapists, but he was at the second nerdiest table with a couple great geeks as well. Again, I just want to remind you that this is the She-Hulk Attorney at Law special. If you have not finished watching the season, you're going to want to probably dip on this one because we're going to get right to the spoilers. Like our good friend Chris Robinson, he was listening to it and he was like, oh, gotta go, gotta go. Real quick, Von Bolden says, She-Hulk was a fun show and character. I especially loved the relationship she had with, spoilers, I warned you, Daredevil. All right, let's just get to it. Here's Ian Kerner. Ian, what's going on, man?
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
How's married life? Covered.
You know what? Married life is good. How is your married life?
It's pretty good.
I saw y'all. Y'all seemed happy at the table with our good friends Jason and Ashley Inman, Diallo Jackson, and someone who hasn't been on Geekscape but should, Jonathan Root, who's fantastic, and his wife Holly.
Yeah.
They're major geeks.
It was a fun table.
Actually, Jonathan performed at our Geekscape Live, so I think that entire table has had Geekscape regulars at it. That was great. It was a lot of fun, and you guys were awesome. Ava Star from Twitch says, I'm still waiting on those photos. Well, get on like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I've been putting up plenty of photos from this past weekend, and I've been trying to like pace myself so I don't get totally annoyed. Annoying.
You want to keep it at partially annoying.
Yes. And it's hard for me.
I know.
If you've been listening to Geekscape or know me at any point, you know me keeping it to partially annoying is really hard for me to gauge. I don't know when I sometimes just bust through annoying. Let's talk She-Hulk, dude.
Okay.
I think coming off of the heels of things like Moon Knight, Miss Marvel, we enjoyed those shows. We loved them. And they prepared us for a show with 9 episodes that was probably going to be on par. Would you say that this show is on par with those?
I love, you know, listen, we keep saying this as we keep reviewing these Marvel shows. I mean, I think they have done such a phenomenal job of really getting the spirit of the comic books. And I mean, I love how every single show is so different than the ones before. You know, we used to talk about this in the earlier days of the MCU with the movies, that they were going for different genres. And I think we said this in one of the more recent specials that they really, and not to jump ahead to talk about the finale, but they've really gotten sort of an homogenous feeling, you know, I feel like of late, the movies, you know, they all kind of feel like very much the same thing. It's definitely what the attitude I get from my wife. She's like, okay, again, it's the same thing over and over again. She's tired, you know? And for me, like when people talk about Marvel fatigue, I'm like, yeah, but these shows, they're just so different. And as a regular and avid comic book reader, I love it because each one is different in the way that, you know, every comic is different than the other comics, you know? They're not all the same thing. They have very different feelings. You know, their identities are different. The characters are very different. Everything about them is different. You know, this one, they went in saying, yeah, this is a legal comedy. You know, I mean, what does that even mean? You know, from a television standpoint, you know, I point to things like Ally McBeal, and it definitely has a bit of the whimsy of an Ally McBeal, right? But it also very, very truly lived up to a few different versions of the She-Hulk comic. Pretty much ever since the Byrne one, there's been some element of She-Hulk and the breaking the fourth wall thing.
Yeah, I believe She-Hulk did that the most, and it got more and more intense as the season went on. And yeah,
she did it before Deadpool did.
She did it a decade before Deadpool did it. And it was
She-Hulk run started in 89 and Deadpool. Well, Deadpool, when he first premiered, didn't initially do it. He didn't do that, I think, until was it the Kelly run or the Nisi Ezra run? I think it might be the Kelly run that he started breaking the fourth wall. The
Nisi Ezra run was a few years later.
So, yeah.
Okay, so I honestly thought that, I mean, with some of those advertisements of the Marvel Comics, I thought that She-Hulk was doing it prior to 1989. Some of the fourth wall breaking stuff.
Well, her solo series, wasn't that around 89? I thought that's around when it started.
When they started She-Hulk, and we'll talk about it, but Stan Lee started She-Hulk because CBS had the rights to the Hulk.
Yeah, but she wasn't doing the show. It was a very, the original series is the Savage She-Hulk original series. Right.
She
didn't have that tone. It wasn't the breaking the fourth wall stuff. It was Wimbo.
But the character was created out of a fear that CBS was going to be able to trademark She-Hulk away from Marvel. So Stan was like, oh, I'm going to create this character, She-Hulk, so that CBS doesn't have a claim to it.
Was about, what was that, 79, 80, something like that?
79 and 80, yeah, because the show premiered in 78. And then 80, and we've had Kenny Johnson, the cult showrunner, on the episode before, and Kenny's got amazing stories. If you go back and find the Kenny Johnson episodes on Geekscape, he's got some amazing episodes about showrunning that first Lou Ferrigno, Bixby Hulk show. And I mean, they're phenomenal. And I love those stories. But this character came out of a concern for losing the rights legally and became a lawyer, maybe as an extension of that, maybe as a commentary on the fact that
the whole
character exists because of trying to avoid some kind of a legal battle. So let's get to the episodes. When it starts off, you see her and Bruce as cousins on this trip. And obviously, like, Mark Ruffalo is going to have that Avengers star power with him. We're going to tie it in very quickly to the MCU.
Let me say that I was reading an article with the showrunner, Jessica Gao, from earlier this week. She was saying that originally they were going to do that in episode 4. They were just going to jump right into She-Hulk. She's She-Hulk, right? Everyone's wondering what her origin is. And then finally she says, okay, oh, you guys probably want to know. But I actually liked that they sort of addressed that right away in the beginning. They started that way and they said, oh, you guys want to know what happened, you know?
Yeah, there was a very short scene that was like, hey, I got to go to trial. Oh, wait, look, you might be wondering what's going on. And the first two episodes kind of are her episodes with Bruce. What I liked about it, Ian, was that it almost becomes a joke throughout the season. What are you clicking on? You think I can't hear you clicking? No multitasking allowed, Ian, please. Look at him trying to be a Hulk and a lawyer at the same time. Listen, pal, you think I can't hear you clickety-clacking? The Geekscape is going to hear you. They want your attention. They want you, your dedication.
I'm a clicker.
I know you're a clicker. So well, it's distracting me is what the problem is. So I feel like the good thing about having that in the first two episodes is you get the star distractions right out of the way. I mean, so many people, including ourselves, like we watch these Disney Plus shows, the MCU shows, being like, hey, how are they going to expand the universe? And it's really not fair to the name character. It's not fair to Jennifer Walters, and they make fun of it throughout the season.
Yeah.
Hey, I know you're only watching this to see when Wong shows up, when Daredevil shows up, when any of these other teased characters show up, and having Bruce literally jettisoned after the second episode and going literally off planet is a really smart move to say, hey, it's Jennifer's show. This is her show, and you should probably shouldn't distract yourself like Ian clicking away by waiting for other characters to show up.
But you know what I really liked? Because, you know, you've seen this in other things. You've seen this in, like, you know, honestly, like, one of the things that drives me crazy watching Superman and Lois is there's zero reference to Supergirl in a show that spun out of Supergirl. There's no reference.
That's a good point.
They don't say a word. Like, and literally, I get it was COVID. They were going to do a crossover, you know, and all that. They didn't, but reference it. And this, a lot of the time you get the, okay, you saw that he went off planet and that would be it. You wouldn't mention it again. No, they keep mentioning him. They keep bringing it up. She keeps saying, I keep trying to call him like a real person. Like she's still referencing, I can't get a hold of Bruce. I keep trying. And they keep throwing that in because that feels real, right?
Well, what I wanted to know actually was in this episode, you have Bruce and Jennifer, the blood gets into Jennifer and she gets the She-Hulk gamma radiation that way because that Sakaaran ship just randomly like shoots the road and they crash. What was the origin?
They shoot the road, it came down and just got in the way and they just swerved. Right. It wasn't attacking them. It was just meant to be a messenger.
There's
a joke that's actually the origin that Jen is working the DA's and it's a full on, very of its time. She was, you know, the DA against the mobster and they tried to kill her and they shot her and Bruce was there and had to give her an emergency blood transfusion.
Okay. So there's kind of a blood transfusion effect.
Yeah. But did you notice that in one of the later episodes that was like people not knowing, oh, there's a rumor that, you know, the mob shot you, and you know, the whole thing. It's like, yeah,
I didn't hear that.
That's
a great Easter egg.
Yeah.
So the Sakaaran ship stuff that if you don't recognize Sakaar because you didn't watch Ragnarok, like what's the story there?
So, you know, Ragnarok was a movie that came together out of the whole idea that, you know, Marvel originally had licensed the Hulk to Universal. So when they created the MCU, Universal distributed the Hulk movie. Right. And they had done the Hulk movie before that as well. So they still have the rights. So Marvel's not been able to do a standalone Hulk movie. But they really wanted to do Planet Hulk. So they basically combined the Planet Hulk storyline. Everything about the gladiator stuff and all that stuff and being on that planet comes out of Planet Hulk.
It just had to be a Thor movie.
Yeah, they made a Thor movie. And, you know, they brought in one of the Elders of the Universe, which is different. But mostly they kept the same thing. It was all the warlord stuff, all the, you know, rebellion stuff, all that stuff comes out of Planet Hulk. And so if you know, and obviously we're going to about to call out what's coming, but Hulk's there for a while. He had been, you know, as opposed to being voluntary in the comics, he basically was banished. He was out in space and basically the Illuminati jettisoned him there. And they meant to send him somewhere safe, but he fell through a wormhole instead of ending up on the safe planet, peaceful planet. He ended up on Sakaar. And of course it's Hulk. So he ends up forming a rebellion and overcoming everyone. And so it's Planet Hulk. And in the process, he actually, because this time Hulk was more or less got to not quite Professor Hulk, but an integrated form of the Hulk. Okay, so it's not that Banner wasn't separate exactly. But at that point, that form of the Hulk, has his intellect. But so he has a full-on relationship there with someone called Kyara. Kyara the Old Strong, because she has like an ability to sort of almost become like stone. But and ultimately, Sakaar gets destroyed. And Hulk survives. And he thinks she died. And, you know, there's a kid. But, you know, and basically thinks the kid that, you know, she was pregnant. But later, he comes to find out the kid survived. And between being Hulk's son and everything else, when she'd only be a few years old, but he actually appears like an adult. So sure. I know I'm kind of getting ahead. But basically, when I see that, Sakaar's trying to reach him, I immediately knew, this has to be about Scar, who's Scar, son of Hulk.
And so that ship shows up, they veer off the road, the blood gets transfused, and you have Bruce kind of putting her through some training origin story. I love the commentary that she's like, hey, I always deal with this level of rage.
It was so clever, so smart,
so easy to control. I don't have to turn into a mindless monster like you do and then learn to live with my rage. I've always had rage because I'm a woman in the society. And that's when you start getting the commentary that is awesome throughout this series.
Yeah, and I actually particularly love that. I mean, also, it's important to acknowledge that, you know, what we've seen with different gamma reactions is they affect people differently. If you go and read things like, there's been times that you have like Leonard Sampson, who's a character in the comics, who's a psychiatrist, and they talk about how gamma affects people. And it usually tends to stem from their subconscious. So Leonard Sampson was Jewish. So, and also at that time, wanted the Hulk's power and strength. So he basically becomes a version of Sampson. He gets long hair and the hair's green,
And Dr. Sampson was in he's in the MCU. He's in the Ed Norton Hulk.
Yes, he is. Sam Stearns, who's going to reappear as the leader in the comics, was a janitor and wasn't very smart and really wanted to be smart. So, I mean, they've changed that one a bit. And it seemed from the end of The Incredible Hulk that since it hit him in the brain, it affected his brain. But in the comics, it's usually there's more of a psychological reason why people end up having some kind of mutation that's a little different than that, but anyway, I mean, like in Jen's case, instead of being a very small woman who's maybe not as noticed, she becomes this strikingly beautiful gamma powered woman, who's sure. super tall and everything. So,
she's not the only powerful, beautiful woman that we see in this episode. Titania shows up at the very end. What's her story? I loved the Titania character and she only got better as she got more and more obnoxious as an influencer, but she's not an influencer in the comics, is she?
No, Titania in the comics first appeared in Secret Wars. Two characters that were created, a city, I think it was Denver, got transported. The original Secret Wars, basically the areas were transported to this planet that became a battle world between villains and heroes by a being called the Beyonder. And a couple of civilians end up getting powers there, Titania and Volcania. So they basically first fight She-Hulk and Titania, you know, for the first time there. And Titania goes on to become pretty much like one of the biggest recurring She-Hulk opponents. Recent She-Hulk comic, they actually finally sort of buried the hatchet because She-Hulk's basically like, why are we fighting all the time? Titania's character's come a long way. She was a full-on villain. She ended up marrying the Absorbing Man. But, you know, she's, I don't know if I can quite call her anti-hero. She's trying to be better, to not just be straight up villain.
Part of that new gamma radiation cleanup team that they tried launching, spinning out of the Immortal Hulk.
Yeah.
And I didn't read that book because by that point, was it okay? I mean, it had some of my favorite characters on it.
It's a good book. Same creative team. It's good. It's worth reading.
Okay, now the second episode, Superhuman Law, really starts to dig in on the law firm stuff because she loses her job at the original law firm because she's She-Hulk and creates a scene, thanks to Titania. And now in the second episode, she finds a new law firm that recruits her and says, hey, like, we need a superhuman law division. And you're a lawyer and a superhuman. We got this Emil Blonsky case. I know that during the Ed Norton Hulk movie, he tried to kill your cousin, which I love the line where Bruce says, I'm almost an entirely different person, because joking about the Ruffalo from Ed Norton casting change. But the Emil Blonsky stuff that showed up, we can obviously talk about Emil Blonsky actually, but are her co-workers like Nikki and Pug, are they from the She-Hulk comic?
Yeah, so not Pug, Mallory Book, and was it Hollowell, are all so they've done She-Hulk as an attorney a number of times. And a few series ago, they introduced that particular law firm. They did a bunch of stuff with that law firm, some extra-dimensional stuff. But, you know, it's interesting because they're building this out. You know, in the Marvel comics, you know, they've been around for so long, you've had this whole idea of every now and then, you know, you need an attorney. It was Matt Murdock. And then at a certain point, it became Matt Murdock or Jennifer Walters. And it's interesting because, you know, it'd be like, all right, maybe it's civil, maybe it's criminal. They never really distinguish. It's like everyone can do everything, you know?
Right,
you know,
sure.
Foggy Nelson, who's Matt Murdock's partner, he's often, you know, one of the people. But it makes sense because, like, obviously the heroes are going to go to the, you know, the lawyer they know. And obviously one that's one of them works out well. So interestingly, in the current She-Hulk book, which hasn't been on that going that long, she's actually working with Mallory Book again. But and the whole thing is that she shouldn't have any superpowered clients because it's a distraction and it always becomes disruptive. So they kind of go the opposite way.
They can't keep rebuilding courtrooms, I think, is what we're discovering in this.
But series. You know, but that's the thing is her ability to generate money and everything else is like, you know, because everybody knows her. So one of the interesting things about this show, and I thought it was really kind of cool, like, oh, she's an Avenger. Well, she isn't an Avenger. But in the comics, she's been both an Avenger and a member of the Fantastic Four. For quite a while, she was an Avenger, and actually in that Secret Wars that I mentioned before, everyone gets transported to this other place, and they come back soon thereafter. But everything's changed, and as a comic, it basically in 1 month, the end of all the issues, they went, and then the next issue they all come back. But then the comic takes a year for the miniseries to play out, and everything has changed, and you end up seeing how it happened. And basically, Ben Grimm, the Thing, stays on the Battleworld planet, and She-Hulk replaces him in the Fantastic Four and goes on to be in the Fantastic Four for quite a while. John Byrne was the writer-artist on that book, and he actually, eventually she leaves and he does her own book. So all the breaking the fourth wall and all that comes from John Byrne doing that with her.
That's awesome. And again, like almost a decade before Deadpool did it. I was kind of sad that people online were accusing She-Hulk of doing the Deadpool thing,
right,
and just not educating themselves as to the actual origins of it.
Right. And John Carter of Mars was copying Attack of the Clones, right?
wait, somebody said that?
Yeah, no. People that don't know, they watch John Carter of Mars and they see the whole gladiator scene and they just assume it's so much like Attack of the Clones, right? But they don't realize that it, you know, was, you know, what, 90 years before or
and
something.
Dune was ripping off A New Hope, I guess, if you're just going to keep going. Oh, that's
people
terrible.
People don't know.
The Emil Blonsky treatment here, like obviously, like we saw Emil Blonsky in the Ed Norton Hulk. We saw him briefly in Shang-Chi, but here we actually get to know him as like a more mindful Emil Blonsky. I think that Peter David really leaned into that on the Maestro series, where it's like he's very like, hey, I actually don't love being the Abomination. I have my entire brain intact when I transform. I will help you deal with the Maestro, but. I'm still pretty intelligent. Here we have like a new kind of Emil Blonsky when he's the Abomination.
Well,
he's
I will say I was surprised that they did the whole depowering thing. That's not something that the Abomination typically does.
It allows himself to be depowered?
Well, that he can at will, like the way that...
Sure.
Yeah, you know, same thing in the comics. Like Jen can go back and forth. I love, you know, the Hulk, but, you know, not necessarily making it about being angry. You know, and usually, you know, it's not been the case with Bruce and Abomination. That's a rare thing. It's not usual that they can all do that.
So the Abomination is just the Abomination in the comics. He never turns back to Emil. He's trapped as that character.
Yeah.
I liked it here. I thought it was fun. And I mean, obviously, if you have a star like Tim Roth, who's a phenomenal actor.
Exactly.
You're going to want to see him.
Well, it's also money.
He was great.
It's straight up money. Come on. I mean, they made the joke in it with She-Hulk about it being about the money.
One thing that I also noticed was there was a lot of criticism about the CGI early on, especially in that first trailer. I think the CGI got like, and there's still times where it's like, oh, they kind of move like a Sims character. But by the end of the season, I felt like the CGI had jumped by leaps and bounds.
I think it got better. Listen, I think that when you're looking really closely at it, you kind of see it a little bit, but it's still pretty amazing. I mean, the face is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and moves and everything else. I mean, the fact that it's slightly off, I mean, you know, especially for a television show, you know, I think it's improved in leaps and bounds over the years. And I was able to suspend my disbelief.
Yeah. The third season, things start. This is the one where I think the fans who are, you know, they're the angry nerds. This one kind of tore it for them. The Megan Thee Stallion episode where she deals with the Light Elf. Stealing the artifact, or actually faking that they are Megan Thee Stallion. You get it. And Light Elves, are Light Elves usually that like
mystery? No. I mean, look, you know, and we'll get to this also with the Wrecking Crew, you know, they've done this really great job of, they've built out aspects of Asgard, and particularly with, you know, Asgard now being on Earth. They've done some really cool creative stuff with that. You know, Light Elves are, you know, they're from one of the realms. No, not necessarily a trickster thing, but it was fun and funny, you know?
Yeah, it was hilarious.
And it makes sense that you'd have some of that crossing over. You know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did a bit of crossing over stuff as well, you know, with, you know, in Asgard, and he got stuck on the planet because it was before Asgard was there. And that makes sense. And I think it's realistic. I like that. We're seeing things like that. Sure, it's going to come up in court and things like that, you know, that it's just real world ramifications of these things that are now part of the, you know, the Marvel, the MCU, Earth 616 world and life. Listen, it goes all the way back for me to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. pilot, where it's like, hey, suddenly you have different technology, you know, existing on Earth, and that's going to affect things and affect people. And suddenly you have, you know, these different organizations popping up and the honestly different bad guys. And I think that they really dived into that a great deal in Homecoming with Vulture and Damage Control, you know? So, you know, we get more and more of that. And again, I dropped the line of Damage Control. We saw a bit more of Damage Control's purview in Ms. Marvel, and we see it here with the prison, right?
Mm-hmm. And in the Wrecking Crew at the end of the episode, these four knuckleheads at the end of the episode with Asgardian weapons, they have Asgardian equivalents of what the Wrecking Crew have, and the Wrecking Crew weapons are magical though in the comics as well, though, right? Yeah. But they're actually criminals. They're big buff dudes who are the Wrecking Crew. They're Thor.
And then they gain abilities from having the enchanted weapons. It's not just the weapons. So like they can fight back. They're not at She-Hulk's level, you know, in terms of strength. Sure. But compared to humans, they're probably like met 10 tons level, which is significant, you know.
Sure.
But She-Hulk's way stronger than that.
Here they're just kind of scumbags with those Guardian weapons, and they get tossed pretty easy.
You know, and it's tricky. Not to get ahead of it, I really did enjoy the finale. But my criticism, my problem with the finale is jumping off the way it did. Are you satisfied? Do you feel, coming off everything with the Wrecking Crew and everything else, that you got all the answers that you wanted or needed? You know, I mean, the reset on the, okay, wait, no, let's not do this. So then what did happen? You know?
Sure.
I mean, look, it definitely worked. The creepy.
You're talking about the fourth wall break where she resets the
episode. Yeah. I'm saying, right. You know, so we see the Wrecking Crew. They're trying to get her blood because Bruce said from the get-go, you know, we don't want her blood to get out there. You know, I personally felt that I really, really liked Bruce doing the analysis and calling out that, hey, most people, it would kill. It's radioactive blood. But there's that rarity, that one in a million that it would affect. And I actually kind of loved the kind of jokey thing that it actually affects her slightly better than it affects Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, using qualities from getting the blood from her, he was able to fix his arm and it wasn't just fixing itself.
Sure. We'll talk about that finale because I have questions about what Jen's fourth wall breaking powers give her when she starts to collaborate on a bigger scale with things like maybe the next Avengers movie or et cetera, when she's on a bigger team.
Powers is an interesting idea because the Shield comic never really treated as power. She just broke the fourth wall sometimes. But now there's a character called Gwenpool in Marvel and it's straight up like it's a power.
Her ability to break the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Is a power.
And she does it. Yeah. And so this felt much more like what Gwenpool's done in recent years. COVID messes me up, but I think the Gwenpool book, was it a year ago or 2 years ago? But basically, that was a major aspect of the book. Literally, like, turning the page and, like, go back over here and that kind of thing.
This Intelligentsia group that is going after Jen's blood, is that from the comics?
It is, and, you know, that's an instance where they, what I'll say, they very much MCU'd it in the sense of taking a name and then running within a way there's nothing like it, like a la Age of Ultron is a title of a movie, you know, where it's like nothing like what the Age of Ultron story was. Intelligentsia exists, but basically the Intelligentsia is a gathering of some super smart Marvel villains all together.
Okay, so like the Illuminati.
Yes, sort of like the Illuminati. And actually show up big, less in S.H.I.E.L.D., more in like the Red Hulk book and at sure. That point. It's a big thing, and it's MODOK and characters like that. So
that's kind of fun, though.
It's a lot of fun, and when it popped up, I was hoping, but you know, that's not what
I was hoping, that at least Samuel Stearns was in there, the leader. Like,
would have been great,
and not that he's not.
Yeah, I mean, leader of the thinker. I mean, there are
some of the more Hulk based villains be a part of it, but then again, I think that the commentary they use with the Intelligentsia, and I mean.
It was actually very smart, even calling themselves Intelligentsia and the fact that they're a bunch of fucking idiots, you know,
because they
think they're so smart and they're smarter than women. Right.
It got stronger and stronger. They saw it coming. And I think that the writing improved every episode, especially with that commentary, because it became indefensible criticizing this show. You could not criticize the show and not fall into the trap that the show is making fun of you for.
Right.
You had mentioned to me that
reviews are actually lower than any of the Marvel series, and it's specifically because of
the Rotten Tomatoes comments. The Rotten Tomatoes is in the 30s,
and obviously, what does that even mean? Because it's so good. It might not be your cup of tea, but you can't argue that it's not a good, well put together show.
I think it's the best Disney Plus Marvel show. I think it hit on so many. Levels, from the humor to the writing to the action to the commentary, it was
fully setting up like Marvel movies and everything else, right? And setting up Daredevil, the Daredevil show, and you know, like it actually paid off, and having Wong in it, you know, like it paid off so many things, right?
It was awesome. The one thing that got me on episode 4, the Magic Castle episode, obviously we love a couple of the characters in that one.
But was there a character in that we particularly loved?
Well, I think everybody was saying the whole what's the name of the character
Madison.
That everybody Madison, the whole Madison with a Y thing. I think people loved that. I thought it was great.
Two N's, one Y, but not where you think.
Donnie Blaze is so close to Johnny Blaze.
Yeah,
but that no, I no kept relation. Being like, whoa, yeah. No relation.
Such a weird episode. Choice that.
I'll skip it and go to episode 5, the Titania trademark one. That really comments, I feel, like the lawsuit origin of the character.
Yeah.
The 1980s lawsuit, you know, that was awesome.
I love them calling out that the episode's basically a frolic. Like, they just go off, you know, like, now we're doing this wedding thing and all that. And she straight up says, like this, really, we're doing this in the middle? You know? Like, that was so funny.
We're going to do a wedding episode. That being said... My biggest reservation with the finale was Josh Miller, the nice guy that she meets at the wedding, who you find out ends up working for Intelligentsia and stealing her phone,
her blood,
and he copies her phone.
Yeah,
right. We never see him get his comeuppance on that one.
That's true.
He's not in the finale. And I, you know, and as much as we liked Josh, we liked the idea of Josh, we liked that whole montage sequence. And Heidi's the one who called it. She's like, I don't trust this. This is too good. And as much as we love seeing a guy love Jen for Jen and fall for Jen as Jen, Heidi never trusted it. I wanted to believe it was real. I was heartbroken it wasn't real and that he betrayed her. I wanted to see that fucker burn. And we didn't see it. And that's my one reservation with the episode.
I agree. It doesn't mean there isn't a callback down the line and we don't get it, assuming there's a season 2.
I can't wait. And I love that the reveal of Hulk King, like the biggest troll, the biggest incel was the leader of the Intelligentsia as we know so far. That fucking creeper who invited her out to.
Yeah. But which, by the way, was fully consistent, right? There was it's like you didn't necessarily expect it to be him, but it totally works at its head, right?
Sure.
But that's another thing. Do we want to get fully into the finale, or
I think I want to talk about these goofball 70s and 80s characters from the retreat episode,
right?
Because that was my favorite episode up to this point, because I love the 70s, 80s derpy characters, and you get four of them in this episode. You get the return of the Wrecker, which we already saw in the Wrecking Crew, but Manbull, El Aguila, Porcupine, and Saracen are the derpiest, like 70s, and 80s, 90s.
I tell you, really interesting choices. Like, Saracen is like this vampire character, supposed to be like one of the most ancient vampires.
But he's also from a Punisher book.
Blade, I thought.
Well, so Saracen, you know, I'm just looking at his wiki, but the character made his first appearance in Punisher 22, 1989.
It was in Blade 1.
The vampire version first appeared in Blade number 1. There's two versions of Saracen. There's the Punisher version that got killed off in a one shot, and he's like just a criminal.
No, the vampire version is an ancient vampire, like the first.
And that is still recent, but that's not an old school Blade. That's
no, it's 1999
Blade.
Yeah.
And these are just derps.
Yeah.
Yes, you're talking about the member of the ancient.
Yeah,
it's like, shut up. The nerdy characters that really like get overlooked in the Marvel comics and are almost like comic embarrassments. Like, if they show up in a comic, you know, they're really the bottom of the barrel on the creative stuff, unless they do something cool with them.
Porcupine surprised me because he was very different than the comics. But still because the idea of like, why the hell is someone going to... I mean, honestly, I thought it was clever because I'm like, yeah, he's in a freaking porcupine costume. Like, that's
his
ridiculous.
Look is pretty similar, though.
Look was perfect, but just, you know, personality wise, all that. But yeah, but it's smart, it's clever, you know. Because he's more of a straight. He's, you know, another one of those, you know, bad guy, demolitions crew guy who gets a costume, decides to go be a bad guy, you know.
Rob Banks. Like, that's about all he can do is try
to
rob
it's
Banks.
Like, and honestly, that's sort of one of those typical things they did in so many comics. You have so many Spider-Man villains of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Stiltman being the best.
Stiltman's always the funniest one. Actually, Spider-Man Daredevil villain. You have and Stiltman was great for that. You know, it's Stiltman, but you have Shocker's that same thing, right?
Mm-hmm. But Shocker, I feel like, has gotten upgraded. Like, he's at least been in the Sinister Six a couple times.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Porcupine's never going to be in the fucking Sinister Six. He's Porcupine. His powers are maybe shooting quills. El Aguila, is he he's a straight villain.
Yes, El Aguila is a character that was actually introduced by Chris Claremont in Power Man and Iron Fist. He's a mutant. Okay. But he pretended he wasn't a mutant because he has this ability to generate electrical current. But he also happened to be a trained swordman. So he tried to pretend that his ability came from the sword, but it didn't. He was a mutant.
We skipped Mr. Immortal.
Yes.
And that is a character from the last episode, you know, whose wives are suing him because he kills himself.
That was an interesting take on that character. That character is a Great Lakes Avenger, which is this goofy, you know, for a while there were different Avengers teams, but the Great Lakes Avengers were totally unaffiliated and they were a bunch of screw-ups just with these weird powers. And basically Mr. Mortal's power is if he dies, he gets resurrected, but he doesn't have any other powers.
You know, he uses like a meat shield.
He gets killed, you know? So, but the idea that he was just basically this, I mean, polygamist, you know, bouncing around all that. I mean, honestly, I thought that was great. I think it was
awesome.
Very fun.
How else are you going to use some of these characters? Like Man-Bull. Yeah. How else are you going to use Man-Bull?
Yeah.
You're just not. Very clever stuff. Derpy characters. Yeah. I love that episode. I also love that you finally get Jen talking about Jen. And she's using Emil's circle to say, hey, like, this sucks. I haven't found anybody to accept me for who I am. And no quicker does she say that than we get episode 8, which is maybe my favorite episode, Rip It and Rip It, because you get one of my favorite Marvel characters of all time. Yes, it's Leapfrog. I mean, I love Daredevil. Daredevil's my second favorite Marvel character, period, after Spider-Man. But Leapfrog's one of my favorites, and he's actually played a huge role in the recent Iron Man book.
Frogman, actually.
It's Frogman, you're right. Yeah. Forget Leapfrog. Sure. Leapfrog's a villain.
Don't forget, because here's the thing, because they kind of amalgamated
They're the
a
same
bit.
Characters, right?
Well, Leapfrog was Frogman's father.
Jesus Christ. But welcome to Geekscape, everybody.
But Eugene is Frogman in the comics, but in the show, Eugene is Leapfrog.
So, I kept reading
Leapfrog
Iron Man,
was a bad Eugene. Guy, and Frogman, who starts off as basically like a teenager, like he starts off as a kid and totally screwing up, but is just has a good heart and really is looking to be a hero, which is how Eugene's introduced to us.
Yes.
So you really just feel like it's the Frogman version.
So Frogman is the one I've been reading about in Iron Man. That is Eugene. Yeah. So I wasn't wrong. That's Eugene. But here they've taken Eugene's name and given it to what's more like a son character.
Yeah. Leapfrog. Well, honestly, and Leapfrog's a better name than Frogman.
Sure.
I think.
Well, the lily pad and the secret like hideout and all this stuff.
Yeah. All
I died. This episode was incredible. And honestly, the episode was just going to be like, hey, let's reintroduce Daredevil. Let's have a bunch of jokes. Let's have a great action sequence along with it. Let's reintroduce some more damage control. And that was it. But the episode still had 4 minutes on it. And when they take you to the gala and you see Jen get set up by Intelligentsia and her entire phone and life get put up on screen and blasted out, and she does finally lose control, that was heartbreaking, and I had a visceral reaction to it. It made me angry, and I loved the writing. It was brutal. So for this being the Matt Murdock episode, and as great as that Walk of Shame was, and all the Matt Murdock Daredevil stuff was.
And I love her going like, hey, how can we have ended this yet? Shouldn't the show have ended right there and all that? Oh, we're setting up the finale. That was great. Well,
Leapfrog is out, and you hear those sirens. No, the ending was beautiful. I thought the ending was great and gut-wrenching, and you just knew that with one episode left, it was time to start smashing things. You know, anything you want to add to the Daredevil stuff? Because from the beginning,
I started thinking we could spend time on that.
Daredevil hasn't really hooked up too much with She-Hulk in the comics, has she?
Not or sexually.
Right. And here, it was a relationship I don't recall from the comics. Yet when it was on screen, it was palpable. I was like, this is definitely going to happen.
I bought it. It honestly, it makes a certain amount of sense with the legal stuff, with where Jen's at in her life. I saw some comments, like online comments about like, you know, like people were bothered, it's not my Daredevil. And I'm like, hook me up. And I'm like, again, like people like, have you read Daredevil? Because
Daredevil very much
totally does that.
He does it a lot.
A lot.
Yes.
Misty
the
Knight,
only thing that
Black
saves
Cat, Black Widow.
Daredevil bends everybody. The only thing that saves Daredevil from ending up with like every STD known to man is he can smell these things coming. That's the only thing. Sorry about that, Ian. If that gave you like a mental,
I mean, it was
tarnish.
A little creepy, but you know.
Yeah, but let's face it, like that power set that he has does come in handy beyond just hearing villains' heartbeats.
Sure, you know? Sure.
As Jim Paganelli says it in the chat on YouTube, Daredevil gets more ass than a toilet seat. I think that's a little better than what I said, but not much.
I think it depends on the toilet seat.
That being said, it did make, again, very apparent that a lot of these online fans don't know the damn comics, because Daredevil gets around. And it was awesome to see. It was awesome to see Daredevil have to do the walk of shame, which you pointed out to me in an article was supposed to be the tag, but ended up in the episode. And I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I don't think you want to laugh after the ending that episode 8 gave us. You want to be mad.
No. And by the way, no, I agree. And I like that even, you know, the calling out the walk of shame after, you know, like it was like it was good. You know, it worked much better as part of the episode.
Okay, Ian, episode 9, the ultimate wall break, and the introduction of Kevin.
Well, but before we even get there, you know, like it's going, it's moving along, and I was enjoying it, and then bringing Emil into it, I'm like, okay, this is all coming together in an interesting way. Where are they going to go with Emil? You know, what's happening here? And then, but it is, feels very typical, and I just absolutely love that she's like, wait a minute, this is what we're doing? You know, like... It's just
what every Marvel thing is.
Yeah. Like, you know, and again, it's like now she has to fight, you know, someone with basically her powers, you know, and the bad guy gets the powers, and now that's what's happening, which is
The big cameo. Remember, we all wanted Doctor Strange to show up at the end of WandaVision?
Yeah.
Like that would have been Bruce showing up here. Like it made all of our criticisms for like, why didn't you do this? Like it just wiped them off the board and said, hey, you think you know what's going to happen? You think we're going to follow the formula of what you want to have happen? No, that was actually dumb. We're going to show you why it's dumb.
Right. But after it, I'm not clear. Like, so what happened and what didn't happen? So Bruce and Scar still count because they show up later.
But they just weren't in that
They just weren't
situation.
In that scene. Right.
And I kind of knew it was coming because it was the same barn from the Circle episode when she enters it.
Right.
And I'm like, wait a minute. Marvel's not so cheap that they're reusing a set pretending that we don't recognize it from 2 episodes ago. That is the Circle set, and they're, you know, that's when Pug goes in as a kind of undercover.
Right.
And I'm like, wait, but the Intelligentsia room is the same thing as the retreat room. Marvel's not going to do that. So I kind of saw that coming. What I thought was hilarious, though, if you caught it, was Josh calling Pug kind of hot. Did you hear it catch that when he's like, that's my man, Pug, man. I love this guy. And he's kind of hot. She breaks the fourth wall. She busts out of our Disney Plus. She rips into one of the Avengers movies, or the Avengers Decoded or Marvel Decoded. Goes into the writer's room, demands to meet with this Kevin. We think it's Kevin Feige. It turns out to be this robot thing, which I love. I think every Marvel presentation going forward has to be hosted by Kevin, not Kevin.
No, but here's the thing. It's an interesting meta idea that comes out of this, because I don't know how well this could have worked years ago. I feel like the general public is much more aware of the behind the scenes of movie making. Like, so my stepson hasn't seen it yet. He's not going to understand it. I'm going to have to explain it to him. He's not going to understand the whole idea of Kevin Feige runs Marvel and all that stuff. So, and that's the question. Is that too meta? I'm not sure. But I do think general audiences understand this stuff better than used to be the case.
And they busted it back to the procedural element. Like, ultimately, she defeated, quote unquote, defeated Kevin by saying, hey, like, let's line up the facts. This is still a lawyer procedural, and I'm going to trick you at your own game. Like, let me put the evidence in front of you. And busted it out, and Kevin had no choice but to let her reset the episode and scrap it. Along the way, and we missed this one on the Daredevil talk from the last episode, there was the stinger when Daredevil showed up from the Netflix series. A little bit of the music cue from the Daredevil song. Mm-hmm. And here you get the shout-out to the X-Men. You get so many shout-outs in this discussion with Kevin. It is the most meta this episode gets. It's the most meta thing we've seen since, I don't know, did you watch the Rescue Rangers movie? That's pretty meta, but it's that level of meta. I loved it. And it was a good way to kind of nicely put back the episode. You got your Daredevil cameo. You actually got more Matt Murdock at the barbecue, which reminds me of the Fast and Furious barbecues. Mm-hmm. And then you also got Scar, Hulk's son, which Didn't totally look like the Scarf in the comics, but we'll see where they go. When
looks enough, was good for me.
I heard that the CBS Universal contract runs out in the next
year. I hear that too, in the next year, exactly. So,
and then you can ultimately get a World War Hulk movie.
And it makes sense that, you know, they haven't told us the name or any of it yet because they're waiting for it to run out. Listen.
Is that the mysterious new film that might be in phase 5 or 6?
That's what I expect. I mean, the fact that they're straight up saying it and calling it out that way was great. You wait for the movie, all this stuff. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that now they're going to put Scar in someone else's movie. You know, it could happen, sure.
But we don't know who he is. So do you think World War? What I'm saying is there's a lot of world events happening in Phase 5 and 6.
Right.
We have yet to see some X characters show up.
Well, wait a second. But here's the thing is, and then the question becomes a Hulk movie that we've got this here. When? So we may as well mention this. This morning it was officially announced that Harrison Ford is playing Thunderbolt Ross. And apparently they announced it initially for Captain America, but New World Order, but also for Thunderbolts. Right. And which begs the question, is he going to be the Red Hulk? Now, people are assuming, oh, Red Hulk, because Thunderbolt Ross doesn't show up in the Thunderbolts comic until he's the Red Hulk. Doesn't mean he needs to be. He could just be leading it, you know, from the sidelines. At the same time, you want to see that. I mean, to me, I think it'd be really cool. You get to a Hulk movie, you know, you throw Abomination in. I mean, in the comics, it was A-Bomb, who was the second Abomination, who was Rick Jones. But, you know, we haven't done that yet. You know, I mean, right. I want the Betty Red She-Hulk. You know, there's been speculation that that might be coming, you know. You know, and obviously Jen as She-Hulk. And, you know, there's also the Lyra version of She-Hulk that it's probably not happening because that's getting into a whole other alternate, you know, timeline that Hulk had a child and she ended up in the 616.
But if the leader is involved in New World Order, the Captain America movie with Sam Wilson, that could lead to maybe a World War Hulk situation where you got all these Hulks running around.
Listen, and by the way, it with the leader being involved in Thunderbolt Ross, maybe that's where he becomes Red Hulk.
Right. And now you've got Abomination. You've got a bunch of Hulks running around. Yeah. World War Hulk movie does actually seem kind of likely for Phase 6. I don't know about Phase 5, looking a little crowded.
But by the way, And this is fully, no one has said this, but you have the leader and Thunderbolt Ross in Captain America New World Order. We've seen a version of Scar and Bruce in She-Hulk. Where might they show up next?
Right. You think they're going to show up in New World Order?
I mean, makes sense to me.
Sure, sure.
Does it really make sense that we're getting a leader? Leader as a bad guy in a movie and the Hulk's not in it?
When I saw that announcement in his return in New World Order at D23, I thought, well, there's got to be some Hulk in it, right? Like, I get it. There's got to be some Hulk in it. And ultimately, like, does that negate a She-Hulk season 2? Does She-Hulk season 2 come after a World War Hulk movie?
It might not. Listen, I mean, I do think, with the probable exception of Loki, this show, the beauty of the way this ends is you don't need a season 2, but it's easily a season 2. It's a great legal procedural thing. It's fun and so easy to do, and nothing negates it. I mean, she can show up in a movie or not. It doesn't negate it at all, because this is just her regular life. Showing up in a movie is because she's needed. Listen, but at the end of this, she says, all right, she's going to do both.
Right.
She's accepted that. No, she's a superhero and she can still be a lawyer.
Right. Jim Pagnarelli wants to ask, while we're on the subject of the Hulk, he's over on YouTube. He says, what do you think the odds are that we might eventually get a Joe Fixit Gray Hulk, who's also a Soprano-style mobster?
Unlikely.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that version of the Hulk.
I love that version. I love that book. It doesn't feel... That's so far removed from where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
It could happen. I mean, is it a movie? Is it a TV series? What is it? What's the point of it? That we're already doing Scar, you know? Right. The Joe Fixit doesn't really go with any of the Scar stuff.
Could we, in the Battle Worlds, maybe we'll see a little Battle Worlds and
we could definitely get that in a different universe easily.
We could also get Maestro.
Absolutely.
We could get a bunch of fun stuff.
Listen, doing the Future Imperfect, doing that story, I'd love that. That's a great Hulk movie, to get him transported to the future and have to fight the Maestro. You know, good, and then you could easily pull in Maestro after, you know, on his own, right, which they've done. But, you know, I mean, I love that. I'd love to see that. And that's a great Hulk movie.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing Rick Jones, seeing all the remaining Marvel characters.
You're not getting your Rick Jones. Marvel has not introduced Rick Jones in any of the obvious places. All the obvious places they could reintroduce Rick Jones and should have reintroduced maybe Rick Jones.
The thing is, you're not getting it. By the way, you know, in the MCU, we've never actually seen the Hulk origin. Mm-hmm. You know, right, they've referenced it. They could,
yeah, reference it in the Ed Norton version, don't they?
Yeah, but they reference it, but we don't see it. They could easily,
in Brazil when that,
yeah, they can easily backstory was. Rick Jones in and that he's always been around.
Right.
It's easy. But with being straight up out of the comics.
Would you be interested in playing Rick Jones?
I'm too old.
Okay. Who's the guy from like High School Musical? Zac Efron as Rick Jones.
I don't buy him as Rick Jones. Do you really?
He's got the music down. He's ready to go play his guitar out on a nuclear test site. Why not?
You know, Rick Jones is the ultimate. He literally writes a book, Sidekick. You know, he's a sidekick. And for me, I feel like Rick Jones should be smaller.
Okay.
You know? And have sort of an everyman quality.
Okay, I got you. Derek Cranavelt of the Geekscape Network is playing Rick Jones, I think. He was here this weekend. Did you hang out with any of the Geekscapists at the wedding? You say hi to any of them? I know.
I say hi to a few.
I know Big Yanks tracked you down as you were trying to leave and forced you to take a selfie.
He didn't have to force me. I think my wife offered it.
Geekscapist Ian was a big celebrity at the wedding this weekend. And you know what? He has y'all to thank. And Ian's extensive comic book knowledge as well. You've made quite a name for yourself here, my friend.
You've made quite a name for me.
well, yes, you're awesome. Taking it back to Jen Walters, where do you think we might see her again? Maybe that Captain America movie?
I think that's unlikely. There's definitely some speculation out there about her showing up in Daredevil. I think that's unlikely.
Really? Even though they have their own thing going on now?
You know, it's interesting, right? Because there's the question. The fact that he's actually at a meal with her, you know, with her family, I think was definitely a statement that this is more than just a little fling. But they come out and say that he's visiting, he's going back to New York.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like, I mean, there's certainly a way to do it, but She-Hulk in that story sort of makes it a very different story.
Yes. The Kingpin's not going to be throwing Matt around with She-Hulk there.
No.
Yeah. So, that's just not going to happen. Yeah. Bullseye is not exactly going to be hitting Matt with anything with She-Hulk standing in the way. You're right.
And you
don't get a Karen Page story with She-Hulk in the way either.
And that story, I mean, I'm assuming from the title, again, Marvel likes to borrow titles, but if they're going to completely have Kingpin find out his identity and destroy his life, you know, my assumption is going to be, well, that show's not even coming out for a while. We're supposed to see him in other things before then. You know, we'll see. Supposedly, he's going to run through a bunch of different shows before we ever get to that show. My assumption's that, you know, whatever. They're going to hit fizzle. They're not together anymore, whatever. You know?
Sure.
Maybe there'll be a reference to it somewhere before then.
Or they're just friends and the hookup is the hookup.
Yeah.
It's an adult relationship. Sorry, nerds on the internet. Adults are allowed to have those relationships.
Yeah.
They don't have to just get married and be boyfriend, girlfriend. They can have just those casual relationships.
That's right.
But then if they stop being casual, you end up with one of these on your fingers. What do you think of that?
That can happen. Sometimes you stop being casual and you don't end up with one of those on your finger.
Next time we see Jen, in her own series or?
I think more likely her own series. I'm hoping they announce a season 2 and I hope it's soon. You know, one of the issues is that it does seem to take them a while. I mean, as we said when Loki ended, You know, we want more Loki. And honestly, I think one of the ways they dropped the ball in the biggest way in Phase 4 is we've not seen any ramifications yet of the end of the season of Loki.
Sure. Sure. And the appearance of Kang.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and we know we get it in Quantumania, but yes. I feel like, you know, I mean, we haven't seen it.
Isn't that just in January, February, though, brother?
Yeah, but how long has it been since Loki ended?
Listen, you need to be patient, okay?
I can be patient. Was it so May? Is that all? It seems like it's longer ago than that.
I think Loki ended in like April or May.
Is it because we have had like 12 shows since then?
We've had a ton of stuff since then. But I have good news for you, and maybe for the Geekscapers as well. I have another Geekscape that we're going to do this week. Heidi and I are going to sit there and we're going to do a Geekscape live with you. Heidi's going to sit next to me. So subscribe to this if you haven't yet. And keep your eyes on this channel if you haven't yet. But as Dr. Merkin says, Dr. Merkin, congratulations on the wedding and respect the dedication of working so soon after. Oh my God, I handed in an edit yesterday on 2 days after my wedding, and I go off to a film festival to show a movie again in 2 days. So I love working. I'm like a meth addict without the meth. I'm just constantly crazy and moving. Tomorrow, Heidi and I are going to do a Geekscape right here, maybe talking about the wedding, talking about whatever. I'll let her run things. She's running things now. And then Ian, you and I land from the film fest on Tuesday of next week. I'm going to go immediately with my friend Jason Inman, who's now your friend, to go see Black Adam so that you and I can sit down and do a Black Adam special. Would you be down for doing that next week? Yeah, I don't know what to expect from that movie. I have no idea what to expect from that movie.
My expectations are modest. I'm hoping to really enjoy it. I'm actually excited for the JSA.
I am too.
You know, I think it's been spoiled everywhere what the tag is, because they're trying to get people in the theaters. I think it's sad that even with that out there, the projections aren't any higher. The projections are having it around 60 million, which for me, I think is sad, but not unexpected, because unfortunately, Black Adam is not a character that's known to general audiences. Yeah. And just because The Rock's saying, oh, he's a big deal, doesn't make him a big deal.
Right. He should have probably been a Shazam tag.
Yeah. Tag, he should have been in Shazam. At one point, there's talk of doing MOS 2 and him being in it, but introduce him in the bigger movie, and then fine, go and run and do a solo movie. That's what you want to do.
As our good friend Rolf Oppel says, follow him at Casino Skunk Productions over on YouTube and on Instagram. He said, I have no idea what Black Adam will be like. I love Shazam, and I hope they don't just gloss over or make fun of the Shazam film, especially not with Shazam 2 coming.
They're not going to make fun of it. It's just they're just going to acknowledge it in the way of that, all right, there was a champion before. Yeah. You know, and that's what it is. But that's why it belongs as part of the same franchise.
Okay. So we have that coming up next week, Black Adam. We've also got a Black Panther movie back in the MCU soon after. When's the next Disney Plus MCU show? We have Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. I don't know what the next one would be. I mean, I would think it might be Loki. It's been in production.
Could be Loki. You know, there Ironheart, I think, is coming soon, that she gets introduced in Black Panther.
Okay. They pulled Armor Wars off the schedule to turn it into a film.
Where Armor Wars is becoming a movie. Echo, you know, I'm not sure what's happening with that. Yeah, that's been filming.
Okay. I'm going to guess. I'm going to go ahead and say we're not going to get another Disney Plus MCU show until early 23.
That's probably right.
But
right?
Ian, Ralph is also reminding us.
I think Ironheart might be next.
We are getting a Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special.
That's true. We're getting that. I hear good things about that.
Is that like an hour-long thing? It's a one-off. Werewolf by Night?
Mm-hmm.
In Geekscape, you can literally hear Ian and I talking Werewolf by Night like one or two episodes back on the feed. Okay. Let's do this. Big Geeks. Black Adam is to Shazam what Scorpion King is to the Mummy. They have the same origin, so why not? Right. Okay, Ian, thank you so much for joining us on the She-Hulk Attorney at Law Season 1 special. Let's do it again for Season 2.
All right.
Let's do it again next week for Black Adam, baby.
All right. And then a couple weeks after that for Black Panther.
We got a lot coming down the pipe. It's almost like I didn't stop in the middle of it and get married. Y'all just keep demanding Geekscape. I love it. The numbers are good. I am very happy with all of y'all. Keep sharing. Keep leaving 5-star reviews on your podcatchers. Keep telling your friends about Geekscape. Not just me, but the other 30 or so shows on the network. Search for Geekscape. Share with your friends. Stop Ian for a selfie if you see him on the streets. Big Yank style. And we'll catch y'all, I think, in a day or two here on the Geekscape feed with my new wife, Heidi Cox. Thanks for joining us for this one. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.